another episode of Beckett's Babies, a playwriting podcast. Every week, we discuss plays we love, interview theater artists, and share our thoughts on playwriting and theater. We are your hosts, Sam Collier
and Sarah Cho, and we are back after taking a short hiatus. It was a nice little break. I'm a little different. I got married.
What?
Yes. Got married, fully wedded, with friends, family. It was a very small wedding, but all our loved ones were there, and it was a nice weekend. It was a very nice weekend of being together with people. I thought we would have nothing to talk about, but we were all able to make conversation.
Yeah, it was like everyone – I mean, it was my first kind of big gathering since the pandemic, and you could kind of see people were in varying levels of like comfort and reintegrating into society. Yeah. And like we're all figuring out how to do small talk again.
Yeah. And you officiated.
I did officiate.
Everyone were like, God, Sam should do this for a living. Like, you're so good. And I think your background in poetry, like when you read that poem, I started my eyes started watering and tearing up.
You were crying before you even got down the aisle.
What are you talking about?
I think I could have just sat there and like read the dictionary and you would have been crying.
That was such a good poem that you picked.
Yeah, that was a good poem.
Yeah, what was the poem, the title again?
It's called A Blessing for a Wedding.
Blessing for a Wedding.
It was by Jane Hirschfield.
Hirschfield, yeah.
I think. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. You and Nick sent me a script to work with and like so many writers getting hovering together. I think it was a good combination of writers.
Yeah, and then I was so worried all week about fires. Like, they say that fire season can start earlier this year. We're on the rooftop. We're going to see smoke. We're going to breathe in smoke. I'm so nervous about smoke. But
oh, wow.
That's one of my fears. And, you know, it was clear day. There was no smoke, no fires nearby that I'm aware of. People seem to really like the food and drinks. And
well, you did such a good job planning. People also told you that you should be like a wedding planner for
that's
a
so
living.
Funny.
So
that's so funny.
You know, listeners, if we ever get tired of this, just stay tuned for Beckett's Baby's Weddings. Yes. I think we could have a real future.
Oh, my God. You know, I wouldn't mind, I think – maybe micro weddings. Like small weddings planning, like I wouldn't mind. I just think about like the large size, like 200-300 people, and for that size, the wedding party and all the different personalities in those wedding parties.
So
like
stressful.
One of the vendors that I spoke with was like telling me all these like horror stories of groomzillas and bridezillas. And I was like, oh gosh, I have no patience for that. Like I'm out of here. I quit. You can't quit.
Of these people who work on weddings, do they like have an application process and then they can accept or reject you? Because that's what I would do. If I were them, I'd be like, fill out this 20-page application and then I will decide.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think every vendor that they kind of screened me a little. Like, they were like, can we get into a phone call? Let's talk. Let's talk about your wedding. And they kind of got to know me that way. And so they're like, oh, she seems like chill. So she seemed not. And so they were like willing to work, because I think a lot of times they are, you know, independently working, they control their own hours, their own time. A lot of them, they left something, a previous job to pursue this, their current career, you know? And so mainly for hours. I think they want to control their hours. So they could reject and be like, no. Because there's only so many number of people who do this, I think, too.
Right.
There's so many weddings.
There's so many people getting married. They probably could just pick and choose.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt like there was like a screening process too. And I, me too. Like I want to work with someone who was nice and like very thoughtful and like had. I also picked like florists where I was like I was looking at a bunch of websites and I'm like I wanted to see look for florists that was familiar with the area and also I don't know, like they just seemed really. I don't know how, like, caring about the couple, you know, or something like they're like thoughtful about what the couple wanted or
you found such a good florist. Those flowers were beautiful.
Oh, they're so pretty. Yeah. And I was like, I saw so many florists that they're all doing the same like muted colors and very like, you know, this rustic muted look, which was before my first original wedding that was sort of, I was going into that direction. And then, so it was nice to have a florist who was like, oh, I don't have to, they don't do this one type of thing. They could do all sorts of color, work with different colors and
I mean, they were just so sunny. Like there are so many yellows and oranges and pinks. It was just like really warm colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it made me really happy. Just like looking at the flowers, like, oh, I feel so happy today.
So how is it going with repotting your succulents and seeing if they'll grow?
Oh my gosh, yeah. So my bouquet had a couple of succulents because I wanted some succulents in my bouquet. And I don't know, Sam. Like, I can't tell. I followed the direction that you sent me, and I'm kind of waiting and seeing.
Just keep misting them. I mean, don't overdo it. You don't want them to get, like, slimy, obviously.
Sloggy, yeah.
But the soil should be damp, at least till they root.
Yeah. I was really fascinated by the photos you sent me where I'm like, wait, they're like one little leaf of a succulent. Yeah. It's starting to have little babies. And I'm like, what?
They're That's so insane. Cool. They're really magical plants.
Yeah. Very resilient. Like they could really withstand their environment.
And they can withstand a lot of neglect.
Yes. I'm so good at that. I'm gonna neglect the heck out of it. And then I don't know if it'll work, but I pressed some of the flowers from my bouquet and seeing how that's gonna work. Because cool. I want to make a little, just like a small frame, like a little collage of the flowers. But I don't know. I'm not good at that kind of stuff, so we'll see.
So Sarah, since we love giving advice to people on this podcast, as listeners are well aware, what advice would you give to other playwrights who might be getting married?
Oh my gosh. I don't know, honestly.
Or what do you wish you had known 2 years ago when you started this journey?
Be willing to change plans. be adaptable because you just don't know what's gonna get thrown at you. There were so many times where our like vendors, well especially like the venue, would say one thing and then they completely change it a week later.
Really?
Like the menu changed for a reception like 4 times.
Oh my god, because food was so good.
They would give us like, I mean, even the day of, like, they didn't really follow through what they were supposed to do, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was, like, a whole table that didn't get any dessert, from what I heard.
What?
Yeah, you got dessert, right?
Yeah.
You got churros.
Chocolate-filled churros.
Yeah. So, there was a table that didn't get any dessert, and, like, I had to complain about that. But it was, they were, like, give us a menu, and then they were, like, this is what's going to look like, and we were, like, planning on that. We were getting, when you were getting your RSVPs, you know, how you select entree. Like,
select something.
Yeah, so we were, like, going based off what they were telling us what they'll do, and then they were, like, oh, we can't do that. I'm, like, what? Our chef Well, you just met with the chef and he says you can't do that. I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? Like, so there were multiple times where it was very frustrating. So there was this a lot of like negotiating. Like, you have to be, here's the thing, like, unless you're freaking rich and you could hire a planner and coordinator, right? And so you don't have to deal with all that confrontation and stuff. Like,
you have to be, call it confrontation instead of like collaboration.
I know, but there's some parts where I'm, because then you kind of have to be that negotiator, and you're like, okay, well, we want to do this, and you can't do that. What can you do? Like, you kind of have to be willing. Like, Nick really doesn't like haggling. Like, I love good deals and haggling and like finding sales. Like, that's just my personality. So I was kind of like doing all that, like in the ringer.
Well, you did a good job. I mean, the food was amazing. Was there a food item you really wanted that didn't end up being there?
Yeah. I mean, like, we thought we could have 3 protein entrees.
What was the other entree?
So we fish, and it was like brisket, and then it was going to be pork carnitas.
Oh.
Or it was like, if we did pork carnitas, then I was like, we wanted to tri-tip because they're both kind of similar texture, like this.
I mean, nobody at my table could possibly have eaten another bite of food.
We were, all right, good to know.
We ate so well.
Good. And that's, I mean, that was like my one goal. I was like, I rather have, because you know, like, food and the drinks is the most expensive thing about weddings. Yeah. And then I wanted to, if it's going to be small, like, I want good drinks and food, like, good quality of that way. Because if you go to large weddings, you're, like, usually get that buffet style because that's the cheapest thing to feed everyone. And it's, like, usually – it's so generic sometimes. It's just, like, steak and fish. but, yeah, I was, like, if we're going to do small, I want high quality.
Oh, my gosh, that drinks. Brisket.
Oh, so good.
So did you, as the person getting married, get to eat, or were you like
too
busy talking to people and like taking pictures?
No, I ate. I mean, okay. I didn't. The only thing I didn't eat the entire day was the churros, because I picked the churros, and I love churros. It's one of my favorite things. Churros. I don't know how to say.
but you did get the pie.
I did get
pie. So you guys, Sarah had a pie bar. How many pies were there?
There are 5 pies.
5 pies. And you guys must have been left with so much leftover pie, too.
Oh, my God. We're still eating pies. We're still eating pies and brisket right now. Like, a week later, we're still eating pies and brisket. Amazing. Yeah. And so we had a pie bar. And then, you know, do you remember those? We had, like, little grazing cones.
Yeah. They were
the cones of charcuterie. Originally, I had this vision of, like, this giant – that table – banquet table of like grazing, like food and drinks and stuff like that, with pies, like here's pies centered and like surrounded by just like fruits and cheese and meats. And then, but you know, COVID hit, and so I was like, no one wants to like touch all their can. And so our vendor came up with this like really cool idea with like individual cones, and I'm gonna do two different types of flavor, one salty, sweet, and which is my favorite.
Like it was like an assortment of what was in there, like nuts and yogurt covered
popcorn, pretzel,
cookies.
Yeah, there was like a lot of stuff going. It was really good. And then, so yeah, so there was a lot of like adapting, and the vendors really, you know, they spent they themselves too one whole year of like refiguring out their whole way of doing things too. So it was a constant being in communication. And honestly, I think stage managers, you guys would be really good at planning weddings. I think stage managers, directors, if you have that background, like, I think you'll be so good at wedding planning, because that's so much what it is.
Yeah. What similarities do you see between directing a play and planning a wedding?
Well, within a wedding, like, there's – like, every vendor has their part in making it happen, you know, from the floors, musician, if you're doing musicians, the food. So everyone has their part in bringing something to the table. And so you're, like, making sure they are like, executing their part of the day and, like, timing and like their time to shine and they leave. You know, their time to shine.
Right.
It's like something like that where you have to know the day so well that you're like, okay. And then in each vendor, they have a certain number of hours you're paying for, or like they know how many songs to sing, or they have a certain amount of time they know what they could do and the time that they need to do those things. So mm-hmm. like a lot of balancing act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So wow. this is what they would call a DIY wedding, because I was like, a lot of it, other than
the although hiring, you did have a wedding coordinator,
which I won in a contest. There's so many like lucky breaks I got with this wedding where I really lucked out.
Yeah. We have that amazing venue.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yes. It was so funny that my thoughts of what I wanted in a wedding originally, which was like, can we like rent a house and like all our friends are there? And then like competing with Nick's thoughts of like his traditional thoughts of weddings was like, oh no, we got it. Like, it has to be like a restaurant. It got to be this. We got to do some dancing, or I don't know. There was a lot of like us infusing both what we wanted.
Yeah. Together. I feel like you got both of those things in there.
Mm-hmm. And so a lot of, let me tell you, marriage is a lot of give and take. It's a lot of give
so you've
take.
Now been married for 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you've changed at all as a married person? What differences do you notice in yourself?
I've noticed that not much, because this pandemic has been really I'll say this, having this wedding though kept us busy during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Like keeping us busy, looking something forward to, and you know, but gosh, yeah, I think now we are respectful of each other's space even more. Now we're like, I'm like, I don't need to bug Nick every 10 minutes about colors or fonts.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it happened. I'm glad it happened. I don't want to do this again. if I have a good friend like Sam Collier getting married and needs help, I'm so in. 110% so in. Like friends, right. Close
I'll keep
friends
that in mind.
Close friends who like want that extra support, I'm there all the way, because I like,
you have a special talent, I think, for wedding planning.
I know. I love how people said that, and then I'm like, don't say it out loud in front of the coordinator, because she like, the whole point of this wedding, I think, was like her, you know, obviously to give him this prize and like, so she could, you know, promote her own business.
Well, and she was great too.
She was awesome.
Yeah, you need somebody who's like really authoritative and is going to tell people like where to stand and what to do. And
yeah, yeah, everything ran so smoothly because of her. Like,
yeah, you know,
like from photos to where the family is supposed to stand. Like, she just, and she has also like a really good eye. Like, she has a good eye for design too, so she was just
mm-hmm. And she gave us some dramaturgical feedback on the order of events in the ceremony.
Oh yeah, she did. We had a certain order of how we wanted the ceremony to go, and then she basically like,
she was like, no.
But I think it went so much more smoother. Like, I don't know, like,
yeah,
it really,
she was gonna, you guys were gonna do the vows at the end.
Yeah.
And she suggested doing the vows like beginning first, and then do the so for listeners who don't know, Sarah and Nick did this really cute thing called the Unity, what was it, like Unity sand ceremony?
Yeah.
Where they had Nick had sand from Michigan where he grew up, and Sarah had sand from California where she grew up, and they like mixed the sand together into a heart-shaped glass bottle, so it could never be separated, and it was very cute. So originally that was going to be like one of the first things that happened, and the mm-hmm. and the wedding coordinator suggested that that be after the vows.
After the vows, right.
And then your gifts to your parents.
Yeah.
Came after that, which I think was, yeah, that was good. Mm-hmm. That way you could get all the crying out of the way at the beginning.
Yeah. And then kind of start like calming down, and people with who's going to wear makeup on their wedding day, do not, when you get tissue, I've learned that don't, you know, like rub your eyes, like dab, you dab.
Oh, good advice. Good advice.
I was like dabbing, not the social media, like the viral trend dab, whatever you call it, dance. But you dab, you get a napkin and you just gently dab your eyes from the, to get the tears. Oh my God. You guys are probably sick of weddings now.
All right, let's switch gears. So you have something exciting happening. Do you want to talk about the Ashland New Play Festival?
Yes, yes, yes. So this week, Ashland New Play Festival announced the New Voices, 2021 New Voices. It's like a playwrights retreat for emerging playwrights. And we got these five amazing playwrights that will be in this week-long virtual retreat.
And I Which means anybody can watch it, right?
I don't think so. I think it's still good question. It's just a week long where each of these playwrights will be partnered up with a mentor, and there's throughout the day, every day for the week, there's some kind of like a group sessions and like artists, guest artists talking about drama. It could be dramaturgy or anything, and it's like a week long, and I'm partnered up with one of the playwrights where I'm going to read her play and talk about it and kind of just give her whatever support thing she needs, you know, for the play for that week. And they also get a little stipend to help buy back that time, you know, just to give them the time that they need. So, yeah, I'm really excited about this retreat. You know, I've been working with Ashland New Play Festival earlier this year as associate artist, so finding ways to get involved and learning about this new organization along the way. And I think this year they're really trying to do new things. Like, this is the first time they're doing New Voices where they really highlight playwrights, you know, of color, playwrights different orientation. So we're really excited. It's really exciting.
So if people want to apply to the festival for next year or get involved, what should they know?
Stay tuned. All the social media, stay tuned.
All right.
Because this is new, and I think we're all learning how the process is going to be. So this is all new. So I'm really excited how this all is going to pan out and see what's up. But yeah, stay tuned. Follow the social media stuff, because I think that's where all the information goes out. That way. But yeah, okay. I'm going to be mentoring. Can you believe that? I hope
I think you're going to be a great mentor.
what did I say to somebody about they're asking to be a mentor? And I said, you know, I'm going to make them hate playwriting or something. Like, I'm going to ruin their lives.
Yeah, right. You're going to be so good.
I hope so. So that's just a little news there. You have some news.
Well, I went to this residency. So I just want to share with listeners what that experience was like. So I and this is something I applied for a couple of years ago. I was supposed to go last summer because of COVID, it was postponed. So I finally got to go this summer, and it's called Hewn Oaks artist residency, and they take people working in all different disciplines and genres. And basically what it is it used to be a farm, and then it was like a vacation spot, and now it's an artist residency, and there are different cabins. I think there are four cabins total that artists can stay in, and then there's like one big house. And I was in a cabin called Pineclad, set back in the woods. And then this whole tract of land is right on Lake Keezer, which is supposed to be one of the most beautiful lakes in the country. It's very swimmable. Stephen King apparently has a house on that lake, although I never saw him. And it was just so nice because – so the people in my cohort, there were two dancers, and then there was a sculptor, and then there's a guy who does multidisciplinary work and was working on embroidery. And we did, like, potlucks, and we did kind of show and tell – of each other, of like kind of showing each other our work, and it was so wonderful. And the best part about it was there was no internet or cell service available. So for a week, I just was really present. And I occasionally I would look at my phone just to see if anything was happening on my phone, and nothing was happening because I didn't have any cell service. And it was so nice.
That's amazing. Wait, and so this residency, it's like group of different artists of different disciplines.
They bring together, I think they put some thought into how they combine people, how they put together a cohort. And they bring a lot of artists over the summer because everyone's there for just 1 week or 10 days. So they can really accommodate a lot of people, even though they only have 4 cabins. And if there are groups that want to apply to collaborate together, like the two dancers were collaborating, so they were together in one cabin. But otherwise, you have your own cabin. And one thing that's nice about it is they prioritize main residents. So I think it's like 70% of the people they accept are from Maine. But they do also bring in some people from out of state. And they also prioritize people who are at the beginning of their career, which is nice. Like, they really make a point of selecting applications from people who haven't had many residencies before, or, you know, are just still kind of getting going in their field.
I don't think I ever applied for any residencies. So I'm so curious what the difference is. Like, what residencies to like fellowships to what do you like
to play? As opposed to like a new play development kind of thing. Well, so a lot of residencies tend to be very self driven. So for most residencies like this, when you send in your application, you're saying what you want to use that time for. We were all talking about this. All of the people in my cohort were like, wow, I applied 2 years ago. Like, the world has changed so much since I applied. And some residencies ask you to, you know, give something back to the place, like a poem or a painting or something, or they want you to have some kind of showing or event at the end. But this isn't like that. It's very it's really up to the individual artist how they want to spend their time. And so whereas a new play development conference, you're bringing a play and, you know, maybe in rehearsal and presenting it, and then maybe you get feedback. This was much more of a solitary experience. I was mostly just like sitting on the beautiful screen porch and writing. And I did a lot of reading and a lot of hiking and like swimming in the lake and like daydreaming.
It just sounds like you, it was like a vacation.
It was really, really nice. And I was able to start a new play, which felt so good because I feel like I haven't been writing very much, and so this was like exactly what I needed to just focus and write without all the distractions of my regular life.
Interesting.
And some residencies give you meals. This one doesn't. This one you have to bring all your own food. And they have, you know, all the cabins have kitchens, and so you're just kind of cooking. But there are some residencies where, you know, you just show up and they bring you all your meals.
So you're taken care of in terms of like lodging and
right
and
yeah, this, and there's no cost to attend at Hewn Oaks. I think they really residencies really run the gamut in terms of cost. So some there are some residencies where you have to pay a fee to cover all of your expenses, and then there are some where they actually give you a stipend. Mm-hmm. And this one is neither. So you're not paying anything, but you're also not paid anything.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Interesting. I was like, as you're describing it though, I was like, but Sam, you live in rural Maine. Like, you have access to all those things.
I know, but there's something really special about being around other artists and being in a place that's like outside of your normal life, you know, where you're not like thinking about, oh, I should be, you know, working on my like day job, or I should be, I don't know, cleaning my kitchen or whatever, you know, you're just like super focused on creating. And it's just very inspiring to be, after spending so long and during the pandemic being by myself, it's so inspiring to be around other artists who are working in other media and see what they're creating.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And did you follow each other on Instagram?
Yes, of course. As soon as I was back on Wi-Fi, I was like,
that's interesting. I always want to like do that like for myself, just to create my own residency in terms of like, oh, you know, like Airbnb place and then go there. But here's the thing, like I can't, I feel like I will, even if I think this with the residencies, like I don't think I'll be able to focus. Like,
yeah,
I have to be in a, I think I'm more of like in a routine and like I schedule out my hours, and I feel like if I'm somewhere brand new, all I want to do is explore. Like,
yeah.
Not really do what I want.
There's definitely a balance of that. Like,
yeah.
Because when you're in a new place, like there's so many beautiful hikes in this area. And I ended up just doing one hike, which was apparently the best one and like the most bang for your buck. I was like, okay, I'll do that hike. But other, I mean, I could have just gone hiking every day, but I wanted to do some writing, you know? Yeah. So
cool. So this play that you started, was this something that was on your mind for a while and you wanted to write it, or something like
I didn't go into the residency with an idea. I just knew I wanted to start a new play. But I did, as I was writing, I did find myself drawing upon like little snatches of free writes that I had done like even a couple of years ago. Like I looked back through my notebook and I was like, oh, here's an idea. And the other thing was the first couple of days, because I didn't really have an idea yet, I made myself do writing exercises that I would assign my students. Because I was like, I've got to get going and I don't have an idea yet, so I'm just going to do writing exercises. So I kind of made a list of writing exercises that I use when I'm teaching, and I just went through them myself. Which was kind of fun, you know. I was kind of allowing myself to be a student and just see what happened, rather than, because I didn't want to put pressure on myself to make something amazing. So,
well, we're so opposite, because I always pressure myself to create the best. <Just kidding.
laughs> But don't you come find on, that freezes you? When you put pressure on yourself, doesn't that make it harder to go forward?
No.
Like, I just get stuck.
Well, yes and no. I feel like this, like, most latest new play that I'm working on, I did stop at 45 pages. Because I was, like, actually just, like, playing with some lot of ideas in my head, and I was just like writing it all out. And then like I stopped at 45 pages because I was like, oh, this is actually really funny and good. Oh my gosh. And then I kind of stopped because I was like, then I felt I froze in a way that I was like, I need to like, how do I top myself these next 45 pages, you know? and then I'm frozen. Like, I'm like, now I can't write. I mean, now I'm kind of feeling a little stuck, and I'm like, it's in the back of my head to finish it.
That happens.
Yeah.
But do you want advice? Yeah.
Okay.
Well, what I would do, I like when I've been in that situation, I try to take the pressure off myself by saying like, okay, I'm going to write the next scene 5 different ways. Like, I'm going to write 5 different versions of the next scene. And like, even if I really like the first one I write, I'm going to write 4 more just because that allows myself to like not try to make it amazing the first time, but just keep the spirit of play and experimentation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, yeah, I like that because I like what you're saying, because what happened with my brain is that I came in with a lot more play, and then now my brain went analytical because I'm like, okay, right. There's a scene I did that, and I'm like, I need to find a way to connect that. And I'm like, how does that, you know, for act two, because I did a lot of setting up. So I need a lot of like follow through and like call back. And I'm like, I'm feeling that I'm getting like really analytical, and I'm like, to a point, yeah, now I'm frozen. I'm like, well, I'm now figuring out when this play was just meant for me to just kind of like let go and be loose and then like have fun. And like, because I had nothing planned or written. And I think I'm working on this one play for Moving Arts Theater and developing. So I'm like, that play is just like, is that my brain is just all focused on. But I'm like, I just want to, you know, let loose and write something else just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like being really overly analytical about it.
It's almost like you're starting to revise before you've even written the first draft.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I think I'm doing.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah. And on top of that, I'm also – I had this like all of a sudden – inspiration to write this whole new other pilot that I'm like, I started writing, and then I'm like, which is a lot of fun and play, but then now I'm like back to my brain's like overanalyzing it again, and I'm like stopped at page 10. So
I remember, I think it was Nora Ephron wrote a piece about revision, and she was talking about how her approach to writing was always like, she would write the beginning of a draft and get, you know, halfway through, and then she would start again from the beginning and rewrite the beginning, and like that time she'd get a little bit farther in the draft before she realized, like before her analytical brain kicked in, and then so then she'd start again from the beginning and write the whole beginning all over again, and like that time get a little bit farther, but she had to kind of trick herself into writing more each time. And as soon as she started thinking about it in an analytical way, she would freeze. And so she had to keep starting again at the beginning.
Like rewriting the same thing in the beginning?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so she would like, by the time she was done with the piece, the beginning would have been rewritten 20 times and the end would have been written
once. But that sounds like she's punishing herself. Like, she's like, oh, I am overly thinking again. No, I'm going to stop right here. And then I'll like punish myself. This perpetual hell of like going...
I think she was working on a typewriter, so like if you were gonna revise something, you just had to redo it.
Wow.
I know.
I don't want to say it's a bad thing to be like thinking about it and overanalyzing it, but yeah, it does take away the fun of what I just wanted to originally do. My original intention was just to have fun with it.
Yeah.
And now I'm like I'm putting pressure on myself for no reason.
Because you started to think about, oh, what if this is really good? And what if people are laughing? That's going to feel so nice.
Yeah. So I got to like set it up and do some callbacks and add some jokes here. And like, ooh, what kind of jokes? Oh my gosh. Wait, who is this? Who is this character? What am I doing? Who, what, where, when, how? Ah. So that was a lot of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, glad to hear that the residency was good. I don't think I could ever apply to residency now.
Really? It was. I really recommend it. It was so nice. I got so much done. It's just nice to kind of break out of your normal routine and be in a new place.
Yeah. And also, Sam, like, didn't you fly like 4 a.m.?
Yeah.
You had a really tight turnaround.
Because I was really far, you know, I was in the very western part of Maine. It's so interesting because all the towns around there are named like Norway and Finland and Sweden. Anyway, I was really far from the airport. And to get to your wedding rehearsal at 4 p.m., I had to leave at 8 a.m. from the airport. So I had to get up at like 4:30, cleaned up everything in my cabin, packed the car, and left at like 5:15.
Yeah.
And drove to the airport.
Wow. Such a dedicated friend.
And I saw like a little fawn frolicking with its mother. There are some benefits, I think, to being up at 5 in the morning in the summer in Maine.
I saw, since our wedding, like, I've been seeing a lot of butterflies.
Oh, yeah.
So many butterflies, like monarch butterflies. And then Nick's dad, now my father-in-law, he was like, oh, butterflies means it's luck. It's lucky. I'm
oh,
like,
good.
Is it?
I believe that.
So knock on wood that it's a lucky butterfly.
Yeah. I definitely saw a butterfly right before your wedding, like flying around the ceremony area.
Oh, really? Probably they loved all the flowers, maybe.
Yeah.
They're attracted to the flowers. Residencies, weddings,
festivals. Shall we move to Glessons?
Yeah, we'll move on to Glessons. Okay. So I'll go first. A month ago, I bought tickets for a live Zoom theater show play from Geffen Playhouse, and it's called Someone Else's House, and it's supposed to be spooky, which I'm really excited about. They sent us this, like, mailed us a little called a haunting kit that you're supposed to open on the day of the
show. Oh, have you opened it yet?
No. I'm going to follow the rules on this.
But isn't today the day?
Oh, today's – well, yeah, during the show. You're supposed to open it during the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So –
Cool.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about that. This is my, like – it's been really hard for me to be, like, excited about a Zoom play. Yeah, I don't know. Very rare. I'm like, oh, yes, I want to sit in front of my screen for 3 hours for this. And then so when I read the description on this, where it's about this guy and his family house was haunted and the experience from that. And he's like this multimedia artist who's like, I think he's like playing with all the visual parts of the Zoom. And he also sent us this kits. So I'm like, oh, this is, feels like really – interesting, fun, interactive way of doing this. So
I love the idea of sending you something in the mail that's tangible. And
yeah, and I'm like really excited to open it and what's in it. I'm like, what if it's something creepy?
I'm sure it is something creepy.
And it was extended because it was like a really popular, I guess, and so they got extended. So I'm like, oh, I think today's the last showing of it, so we were able to get the tickets for.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, let me read this description. So it's an Obie Award-winning multimedia artist, Jared Mezoki, has a harrowing story to tell. His family's frightening, true-life haunting inside a 200-year-old New England house. Flip the switch, ooh, light your candles, and prepare yourself as best you can for the first-hand story of terror with the latest interactive production from Geffen Stayhouse. That's what they mean. Stayhouse. And it says, due to mature content, children 12 and under are strictly prohibited.
Whoa. So it's
going to be 13 and up.
That's scary.
Yeah. So I'm really excited. I just hope my internet doesn't freeze and act weird. But that's the only downside about these Zoom theater plays. But yeah, that's my glisten.
Let us know how it goes.
I will.
My glisten is, you know, I really do not like action movies. I can't handle the violence. I don't really like action sequences. And yet something inspired me last night to watch this movie, The Old Guard.
What was that inspiration? Like, why?
Honestly, like, I have such a problem picking things to watch on Netflix. I spend like an hour looking at all the options and I'm like, okay, this one. It's like half the time by the time I'm done looking at all the options, I'm like, I'm just going to go to bed. That's what I was exhausting enough just picking. No, I think I was interested in watching it because I just wanted something that was like, had kind of mindless. I don't know. I really can't. I don't know. But anyway, I picked it.
I feel
it.
Like action movies are not very mindless. There's a lot going
on. Well, except like I didn't – you don't have to do a lot of thinking to like get invested in the story. Mm-hmm. It's usually like you know what the story is within the first couple minutes.
Yeah.
Anyway, The Old Guard, it's on Netflix. It's a movie about people who can't die. And they're like a group of immortals led by Charlize Theron. And I really don't know what else to tell you except I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was delightful.
Was it delightful like in a fun way? Like has some humor? Or
definitely has some humor. It definitely has some gay content, which I was very appreciative of.
Gay content.
There was still, you know, way too much violence for me, but I know that just comes with the territory. and I just really like that kind of fantastical supernatural element of like.
Mm-hmm. Did you watch Sweet Tooth?
No, I didn't. I will. That was one of the ones I added to my list.
You would love that one. That's kind of similar. And it's not as violent. Like, because it's like kind of kid friendly, but it has all the fantastical and like kind of the thriller aspect because they're always on like on a search for something. So
that's the one with babies that are born like half animal.
Half animals. Yeah. So this show was made before the pandemic, but it had all these elements of like,
the virus
where so in this world the virus has hit and people are just like coughing and dying, and so there we don't know who's who, like who has it and who's causing it, but this virus has caused this like mutation where babies are being born half human, half animal.
Wow.
And so
it's not like because one of their parents is an animal.
No, it's just this virus is like creating some mutation, or so we think. I don't know. There's a lot of question marks that the show ended with that I'm like, oh, I really can't wait for season two. Like, gosh, Netflix has like – it's always a hit or miss with Netflix sometimes. I'm like, so much junk. But there was also like this like nugget of gold of like, whoa, this is a really good show, premium show.
Yeah.
So you have to like search for. But okay, Old Guard. Gotta check that one.
Yeah,
out.
I don't know. I feel like I'll be curious to see what you think because I feel like you have more discerning taste than I do.
I always question your taste sometimes. But
all right.
But if you enjoyed it, then it's people like you, Sam, that they are making these movies for, you know?
I don't think so, considering the fact that I watch one a month. I don't think I would keep them afloat.
So funny.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And do we want to tell them what we're talking about next time?
Yes. So next week episode, we will dive into the play Between Riverside and Crazy by Stephen Adley Gyrgis. So if you have that play or you've read the play, be prepared for an insightful discussion.
Yeah, get ready to hear our opinions.
Yeah.
And tell us what you think about it if you have already read or seen it.
Yep. All right. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Beckett's Babies. If you enjoyed what you heard or learned a thing or two about playwriting, be sure to like, subscribe, and share the podcast with your friends.
And if you'd like to reach out and share with us your thoughts on playwriting and theater, or maybe be a guest on the show, be sure to visit our website at www.beckettsbabies.com. That's www.beckettsbabies.com, and you can contact us there.
Thanks for listening.